Welcome into episode 68 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast, the Jaromir Jagr episode, alongside Craig Morgan and Jamie. Is it Jamie?
Jamie Eisner.
Not Jaime?
Yeah.
Jamie or Jaime Eisner?
One of them.
Okay.
I'm back.
Jamie's back.
I know nobody missed me, but I'm back.
Do both, depending on the audience?
Okay. Well, yeah, especially out here.
Okay.
He claims,
especially because it's spelled that way.
It really works.
It just screws with everybody.
Claims he was here before. I don't. I'm Luke Lipinski, by the way. I introduce everybody except myself, but
they know who you are.
Okay, fair enough. Where do we start this week, gentlemen? There's quite a bit of hockey to talk about.
I'll
start in Brooklyn.
One less coach employed.
Yes.
Right. We will begin in Brooklyn.
No word on whether or not
begin in Brooklyn. Is that a movie?
If it's not, it should be.
Yeah. No word on whether Capuano had to call his own cab or not.
Oh wow. Well.
But.
Hefty bags.
Shots fired.
Hefty bags.
Look
full
at that.
I mean, the train station's right outside Barclays Center, so in reality, probably would have been okay.
It's true.
He probably has a better view of the ice now that he's not coaching.
Not inside the building?
Yeah.
They can always bring a bus right into Barclays, too. It comes down that bus elevator.
Just park or right with that car.
Or you can take that car.
1/4 mile per hour. Oh, yeah? That's right. There's a vehicle right
but
there.
That's
why it was there.
That's the KHL's gimmick, yet the Islanders are doing it.
Hey,
as a parting gift, Jack.
It could catch on. As a parting gift, we'll give you a ride with this car, but you can't keep it. I already miss Jack Capuano because he just looked like he should be the coach of the Islanders. Did he not? Like, he just looked like
his
the
voice,
Islanders.
His voice, everything. Yeah. The accent, yeah, he just fit there. You're right.
Yeah.
All right, so I think a lot of people entering this season, if you had to guess who the first NHL coach fired would be, I think a lot of people assumed it would probably be Capuano. Not even
Gerard Gallant.
Yeah, it definitely was not Gallant.
Who could end up in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're the Islanders, are you looking for your next long-term coach right now, or are you waiting to the end of the year to see what other coaches are let go?
Well, there are reports they've already asked permission to talk to Gallant, so.
And according to McKenzie, that was weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw it. That's. Okay.
So,
whoops.
Oops.
Weeks ago. Okay.
Maybe I'm naive, but who do you have to ask permission to talk to Gallant at this point?
The Panthers still, because they're paying him.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Do they really care what happens to him?
Talk to their
Don't you remember
manager.
When didn't Columbus have to trade for Tortorella's rights?
Yep.
Yeah, but yeah, I just
and
I felt like there was
too.
A difference.
Florida under contract.
But they shouldn't have any say over where he goes.
I think we made this argument on a podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know when. Maybe podcast number 23 or something.
Yeah, I'm sure that was it.
The coach compensation.
But yeah, I totally agree with you.
Go back and re-listen to episode 23.
If you dump someone, you should have no say over them at that point.
They should have like the make whole con. What is it? The offset language like the NFL has?
Yeah.
Where, okay, if you find a new team and they pay you, we pay you less that or whatever
even,
it is.
Maybe
we don't
not
pay
even
them
that.
Anymore.
I mean, you agree to the contract,
yeah.
So or to the terms of the contract, so you have to pay them out. But why should you have say over somebody getting employed again? That's absurd.
Well, who's going to say no to the Islanders? They're probably like, oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You won't come back to haunt us there, at least.
Right, exactly.
Although, I mean, the Islanders did take the Panthers out last year. This could be the ultimate vengeful move right here.
That.
Or maybe they just hate Gallant so much they don't want to let him coach anywhere. I feel like he's Vegas' next coach. I'm just going to keep feeling like that until Vegas has a coach.
Vegas, not Las Vegas.
It's just Vegas. Vegas Golden Knights.
How do you feel about that, by the way? I'm really bothered by that. Am I really going to write the Vegas Golden Knights?
No.
Do I
refuse.
Omit the city name of any other team that I write about?
No. The Angeles Kings.
Exactly. Yes. The York Rangers.
Yeah.
The Jose Sharks.
Yeah.
I want that to be my name.
The Jose Cuervo Sharks.
Yes. My podcast name is now Jose Sharks.
See, now you're talking marketing opportunities. Now that's something different.
I don't even remember what we were talking about. I just would ask that you two refer to me as Jose Shark for the rest of time on this show.
I don't even want to know where that goes.
Probably not going to happen. Okay.
Now, Jersey Devils sounds fine, right?
Yeah,
that's fine.
Jersey Devils. That works.
Here's the thing, though. I wasn't even thinking that they were just called the Vegas Knights when I called them the Vegas Knights. So I think it's going to catch on real quick.
It's really weird.
It is. The whole situation's been weird.
Well, that's true.
They should have just made their logo a dollar sign.
Nobody screws up a big event like the NHL.
It's just
nobody does.
It's hard to hit the play button on a video, Jamie. It's hard.
Hey, sometimes if you use AOL, it takes a while for it to load.
Oh, I think of Jerry Brown. Whenever I hear AOL, Jerry Brown still has AOL mail. Who has AOL mail? He gets a new email, "You've got mail." And he's sitting right next to me.
Maybe he likes that voice.
Really?
Maybe there's something
how old is that? I always feel like I'm watching Sleepless in Seattle when I hear that.
Yeah, you're just waiting to hear the dial-up tone.
Or maybe even the other movie called You've Got Mail with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
That too, yeah.
I love how when you think Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, and the phrase You've Got Mail, you think Sleepless in Seattle. makes a lot of sense. Anyway, with the Islanders.
Was that a shout at me?
Yeah, it was.
I think it was a little bit.
It really wasn't underhanded, actually. No, it was just pretty straight.
Yeah. Pretty much a full spike. What's up with the Islanders in terms of going forward? They won a playoff series last year, and now they're horrible.
Well, let's talk about that, and let's talk about whether this firing was fair. If he's the fall guy now, right? Mm-hmm. He's the guy that gets blamed for this, and you can look, I guess you can look at the development of some of their younger players, Ryan Strome, Brock Nelson, Anders Lee, even Josh Bailey. Maybe those are guys that should have taken a bigger step forward, or maybe those guys are just who they are. They're maybe not that great a player. But look at the offseason they had. Look at Garth Snow's offseason, okay?
I don't want to.
Yeah.
It's bad.
They lose Franz Nielsen, Kyle Okposo, and Matt Martin, and then they signed and waived P.A. Parenteau, okay?
Just to make a statement.
And then Kyle Okposo signs for 7 years, $42 million, right? Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so, we can't afford that. Then you sign Andrew Ladd, who's 3 years older, for 7 years and $38.5 million. So you saved yourself $3.5 million by signing a guy who's 3 years older.
$3.5 million over 7 years.
Also, did Capuano sign Cal Clutterbuck to a five-year deal? Was he the one that was behind that? Because you got to lock that guy up.
I love these rhetorical questions from Jamie. I miss these.
Three-goal Cal Clutterbuck. So, and make sure you have under contract for half a decade.
Three-goal Cal.
And by the way, they also had three goaltenders until Yaroslav Halak went to the minors recently after being waived.
Right? I don't understand a lot of what they've done. At the top of the list was the three goaltender thing, and the Kyle Okposo one, just it makes no sense, because that was somebody that not only did you know was good, and as you said, was younger than Andrew Ladd, but you knew he could play with John Tavares. So it wasn't just a matter, like, you can sign a good player and he doesn't necessarily mesh with your best player. You know Kyle Okposo and John Tavares work well together. Really great friends.
The weird thing about that was, too, we knew about almost like a year, year and a half out that they weren't going to re-sign him.
Yeah,
like, they just made the decision that, oh, yeah, he's productive, but eh.
That's what I don't get, because now you're hearing the other side of it of, well, they really thought they could get Steven Stamkos, and that's why they lost Okposo. No. We knew 6 months ahead of time, like Jamie just said. And, oh, by the way, Steven Stamkos signed before free agency started last year. So it wasn't like you could have possibly had the thought process of, we're going to get Stamkos. Oh, no, he signed. What do we do? Well, we already have internally decided we're not going to bring Kyle Okposo back, so let's just blow up our team.
And also, they weren't getting Stamkos.
No, they weren't. But even if they thought they were, they knew if when free agency started.
If there was one other team in the National Hockey League, they were not getting Stamkos.
Yeah.
it just wasn't happening. It wasn't happening.
Well, and there are at least more than one other team in the league, so they should have been aware.
Yeah, and that's yet another point here is, why doesn't John Tavares have legitimate top line wings to play with?
Yeah, poor John Tavares, like, it's just unbelievable.
At this point, how are you wasting this piece?
Okay, I've got a couple questions for you.
Okay.
First of all, he's only making $5.5 million still. He took team friendly deals to make sure that this team would be better, and they've somehow gotten worse. So my two quick questions for you, so we can hit other topics.
That's probably enough to buy an apartment in Manhattan.
Yes, he still has a roommate. He's one of the best players in the league. Is John Tavares still an Islander in 2019?
I can't imagine them letting him get away.
Really?
I can't imagine. I mean,
but what if they think they can get Steven Stamkos in 2019?
I don't see Tavares going away unless he just takes a hardline stance and says,
I'm done.
Look, yeah. I'm done with this franchise. Because
would you blame him?
No, I wouldn't. I absolutely wouldn't. But I'm going to have to hear that come from him or his representation first, because I don't think the Islanders would make the decision to walk away from John Tavares, and I think they'll pay what they need to pay to keep him.
But I don't think you're going to hear it from John Tavares, because John Tavares doesn't speak.
Well, you'll hear it from his agent.
That's true. Agents always speak.
You know, yes, even if they're speaking through reporters, national reporters, they still speak.
I don't think the Islanders are going to be like, we got to get rid of this guy. But I would think at some point he's probably like, hey, you know, if I played on any other team, I'd probably be challenging for a cup, because they would build around me. And Luke still thinks I'm one of the top players in the NHL.
He's going to cite you. In 5 years, what's more likely to be associated with the Islanders, Tavares or the Barclays Center?
By my argument earlier, I'd still say Tavares.
Yeah, probably Tavares. I mean, it's a franchise guy.
I think they'll sign him.
You have to. You get that first pick and you take a guy who's been a Hart Trophy finalist, and he's still young.
Look, there's nothing wrong with John Tavares or his representation walking into the room and saying, all right, you want me back? What are we going to put around me? You talked about this before, and we haven't done anything. What are you putting around me? Now, finances may be part of the problem, right? I mean, you look at their situation, it's not great. I was just out at the last game the Coyotes played there, and that place was half full.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a terrible facility for the NHL.
Yeah.
They don't belong there. But it's not like they have a lot of prospects. I know there's a lot of chatter about it, but still got to get done. But regardless, if you want John Tavares back, you at least have to get him some legitimate top-line
Give him
links.
A reason to come back.
Yeah.
You don't think Alan Quine is enough of a reason?
Oh, no, yeah.
Quine time? If you're John Tavares and you're going to have that conversation, shouldn't you probably be having it in about an hour? I mean, I would want them to start building next year, not the year I'm going to be a free agent. He's a free agent after next season.
Sure, but you can go into this offseason saying, look, I'm going into my contract here. You want to talk contract this offseason? Show me. Show me what you're doing. We can talk then.
He's the most wasted talent in the NHL, correct?
I have a hard time arguing that. I'd have to look, but...
You're not going to find it. I mean, who else is that good that is... I know they won a playoff series last year, but that was the most random series ever. And that wasn't progress, obviously.
It'd be an interesting story, actually, for FanRag Sports, I think.
Yeah. Well, it was going to be...
wasted talents in the NHL. Who else would be on that list? Nathan McKinnon, maybe?
It was going to be
Nate McKinnon.
It was going to be a Lipinski list, remember? And then you and I were talking, and we were just like, it's really just John Tavares.
I can't remember last time we did those.
No, we never
did. The last one we did was like the movie, the creepy songs back at Behind the Mask.
It's not accurate. We did one like 3 weeks ago.
I can't remember the last Lipinski list I came up with, so I don't think we do that.
Well, you came up with one and changed it on us.
What I do know is Thomas Greiss is playing pretty well for the Islanders, and boy, somebody should write about how good all the ex-Coyotes goaltenders are doing right now.
Oh, nice plug for my story this week. It's coming. I'm not telling you when. Stay tuned.
Well, I don't really want you to read it, so you have to just constantly refresh your computer screen until it pops up.
No, it's more about my memory. Maybe Jamie remembers which day it's on the budget.
No, you had
is that
chance.
Tomorrow?
I think it is.
I think it's tomorrow.
All right. Capitals or Doan? This is you guys can pick.
That
this
is like, Thursday. Yes,
there's a
Thursday.
Natural connection there, isn't there?
Yes, supposedly Shane Doan's going to be playing on the same line as – yeah. Let's start with Doan because Craig has stuff to tell us. And,
I do?
You have some records to set straight at least.
Well, I
– How about – I'll just set you up and you can answer questions. How's that?
Okay.
Shane Doan – let's start with easy ones.
Are we playing Perriman?
Shane Doan is a free agent at the end of the year, and this could be his last season in the NHL.
Correct.
Okay. What is true?
What is true? You don't have to say what is on the pyramid.
We're doing pyramid. I'm sorry.
Any chance that Shane Doan ends his career on a different team?
Yes, there's a chance.
Okay.
Do you want percentages?
audio.
I can't lay percentages on
this.
I'm
trying to set you up with talking points, right, and you're giving me one-word answers.
Take your responsible journalism somewhere else and hot takes.
I should have asked an open-ended question. How's that?
Okay.
Craig, where do you see Shane Doan finishing this season?
I see him finishing this season as a Coyote.
Okay, so do I.
Here's my take on this, right? I know where we're going with this.
Jeez, that was like pulling all of somebody's teeth.
Look, there's a lot behind this story, more of which is coming out. Part of it, you know, Shane Doan is considering. He is considering, do I want to chase a cup in what, in all likelihood, is my final season? He's had a lot of people in his life encouraging him to do this for the last few seasons, telling him it's worth it. Now, I would point out that some of those people, Ray Whitney being one of them, have been with several teams. They don't have the same story as Shane Doan. Shane Doan's been with one franchise his entire career. None of those guys can say the same thing, and it means something to Shane. It means a lot to Shane, actually. It's a source of pride for him.
It's his identity in a lot of ways.
It really is his identity. It really is part of his identity. So, are you going to... I don't think it tarnishes his legacy in the minds of anyone outside. I think it might tarnish Shane's legacy in his own mind down the road if he makes this decision. Will he look back on it with regret that I didn't, you know, 3 months, I didn't finish the final 3 months with that one franchise? I can't say I was the guy who played for one franchise his entire career. I can't be Larry Fitzgerald, to cite another guy in town, and finish with the same team. I know there are some differences in the circumstances. Now, there's some things that are making him unhappy right now. His role, he's not playing nearly as much as he was last year when he had 28 goals. His role's a lot different. But they talked about this at the start of the season. You know, they knew that they were going to try and push youth more, and he was going to be phased out a little bit more. He understood it. He said he understood it. Understanding it and accepting it are two different things when you're in the moment. Yeah, well, you're a professional athlete. You want to be the guy out there. And when the team's not having success and you're not in a role maybe to push them along a little farther, it eats at you. Whether Shane could still do it or not, we don't know. But again, this is about the future with the Coyotes. This really isn't about this season. So that's eating at him. Yeah, as John Gambadora wrote today on Arizona Sports, there's some issues probably with the way this thing is being managed as well. He's probably not entirely happy. You look at their center position, for example. They put a lot of eggs in the basket of Dylan Strome being ready this year. He wasn't. So you buy out Antoine Vermette. And granted, Brad Richardson got hurt, too. If Brad Richardson isn't hurt, this might be a different conversation. Different. But still, yeah. Their center position is deficient. So what do you end up doing? You end up claiming guys off waivers that the Toronto Maple Leafs and Winnipeg Jets didn't want. That's not a good look for a franchise. When you're plucking guys that couldn't make two teams that are marginal playoff teams at best, maybe not playoff teams. So I'm sure all of that is feeding into this. But what he's got to decide again is, am I letting all of that cloud my view of the bigger picture? Am I letting it cloud everything that's come before this and what being a part of this franchise has meant to me?
I think, obviously, he's got to, like you said, he's got to weigh things out. And I know there's always this narrative when he re-signs with the Coyotes, and generally it comes from north of the border, that Shane Dunn doesn't care about winning. He just cares about his life. He's one of the most competitive people I've ever met in sports.
Yeah,
the guy wants
to
win.
Talk to him after a loss, right?
Yeah, he just hasn't experienced as much winning as you would think throughout his career. And so when you talk about weighing his legacy versus chasing a cup in what is probably his final season, I think the second that's brought up to any Coyotes fan, their stomach just turns. And yet, the majority I've spoken to, none of them want him to leave. Everybody wants to be there for that game against Minnesota to end the season with Shane Doan's last night. Everybody knows it is, if that proves to be the case. Everybody, I would guess, will know by that point. Everybody wants that sort of that moment, but at the same time, I have not talked to a single Coyotes fan that would begrudge him if he went to ownership and said, "Hey, get what you can for me. I'm going to give it one shot here. I'm going to give it a shot here to end my career." And it's different. I've made this point off the podcast before. It's different if you sign with a team as a free agent in the offseason thinking they give you a better chance to win the cup. Anything can happen over the course of 82 games. That team might not end up being as good as you think. But with a month and a half left in the regular season, you know which teams are legitimate cup contenders. And for Doan, I don't think he has to win a cup for it to be worth it. I think he just needs to be in the playoffs his final season and maybe win a series or two. I don't want him to leave. I would prefer he stayed. Like you said, Craig, I still think he will ultimately stay, but nobody's going to begrudge him if he doesn't.
No, I agree with that entirely. I think most people would wish, if he makes the choice to leave, I think most people here would wish that Shane chose the right team.
Yes.
And had the option of choosing the right team, right? Because that plays into this as well. Who wouldn't want to see this guy raise the Stanley Cup?
Everybody will be pulling for that team.
Unbelievable story, yes. Agreed, completely. But as he noted himself, it has to be the perfect situation, and that doesn't happen very much in this league. First of all, there has to be the demand for a 40-year-old player who is probably a fourth-line player now. Does he want to go to that situation? And are the right teams interested in him to put him in a situation to win a Stanley Cup?
He's been a Coyote since before Chumbawamba was popular. So, you know...
Wow.
That's one way to
You accuse me of old references.
Wow. Well, that's the whole point. It's got to be an old reference. How about this? Let's put it more in Craig's term. He's been a Coyote since 20 years after Barbra Streisand was popular. Is that better for you? Does that help?
I think Craig's point was a good one, and we talked about this a little bit before the show. It's what team, if he decided he wanted to chase a cup and leave the Coyotes, what team is going to give him that role, a role bigger than what he's currently playing on this team? Because most of the cup contenders are cup contenders because they have a number of quality players on their team that are already performing for them. Where is that fit? Is somebody willing to put them on a power play unit? Is somebody willing to put Shane Doan on a second or third line? Are you waiting for a major injury that he's kind of a fill-in? Maybe they don't get the top guy that they want on the trade market and say, you know what, we'll bring this guy in. And, you know, I'll let Craig talk a little bit more about this, but...
What if I want to talk?
Okay.
No? Okay. Nah. We'll just let Craig talk. Go ahead.
But how much of an impact, because everybody talks about the locker room impact that Shane Doan makes with the Coyotes. Well, what's the locker room impact he's going to make in a month, month and a half span with a veteran team that is a cup contender? Is he going to go, I'm just talking a team, is he going to go in the, what is his voice going to mean in the Penguins locker room?
Yeah, that's one of those narratives that gets thrown out there so often and I think is overplayed. Oh, who wouldn't want a guy like Shane Doan in the locker room? Yeah, you know what? You're right. Who wouldn't? He's a fantastic guy. But he's not going to have nearly the influence in any other locker room that he has here.
He means more here.
Of course. And that's inevitable because they don't have a history with him. These players don't have a history with him. You don't just walk into a locker room and suddenly become a leader. Especially, I hate to say it, if you're a fourth-line guy. Normally, leaders are guys who are some of the better players on the team. Now, Shane's got a lot of history with this franchise, and people have seen what he's done in the past, including last season when he had 28 goals. If he goes to another team, there's no history at all. So are you expecting him just to walk in and you know, gather the troops, be the shepherd that leads him to a cup? I think that's unrealistic.
The Penguins example is interesting because Mike Sullivan was his roommate at one point, and now he's the coach of the Penguins, and that's one of those teams where you think, you know, I think, hey, you know, Shane Doan could still play a third-line role, and I think he could still put the puck in the net. I mean, he's a guy that can set up in front of the net. He evolved his game to do that over the last couple of years, and unfortunately for the Coyotes this year, they're just not getting set up in the other team's zone enough. And so if you've played hockey at any level, you know how frustrating it can be as a forward to get up and down the ice, get set up, and then the puck is cleared, and you have to start all the way back over. He'll be more effective and productive on a team that has a lot of offense, but using the Penguins as an example, is he cracking the Nick Bonino, Carl Hagelin, Phil Kessel line that won them a cup last year? Because that's their third line.
Yeah, no.
And I'm sure there is a team, but I still think he means more here, not just to the community, but, you know, the Coyotes still have meaningful games this season in terms of you need to get these young players to not accept losing, to keep developing. You want to see Christian Dvorak still getting better and playing 75 games when the season's over. And to me, Shane Doan, it's not just his legacy. He can set this team up better for next year if he's here.
And speaking of next year, you know, you start to look at this Coyotes roster and you start to wonder, well, who are the leaders going to be? If Shane Doan's possibly not back, if Rodion Verbata's possibly not back,
Martin Hansel's
possibly not back, who are the leaders that are going to teach these young guys? And even more next year when we expect Strome and we expect Perlini for a full season and maybe some other players, maybe McGinnis makes an impact. Or
I really
who are going to be the shepherds for those guys?
I think you have to, I mean, when you look at the Coyotes cap situation, they're going to have a ton of money they need to spend just to get to the floor.
But you can't buy a leader.
Maybe. You might be able to get a veteran who can step in at the start of a season and build that rather than, you know, coming in at the end of the season.
That is different. And they're going to have to do that. But still, ultimately, it's got to be guys that have been in this room for a while that are the main leader, don't you agree?
Yeah, they're going to need Oliver Ekman to take a huge step up in that regard.
And I think Max Domi, too, although the problem is Max Domi's missed so much of this season that he still only has played, 90 NHL games?
He's still incredibly 100. Young. I mean, the reality is what's Max Domi going to teach you about a playoff push?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean?
I completely
agree. That's not his
fault. No, it's not.
It's a product of his age and how long he's been in the league.
He does have a little, and I completely agree with you, I'm not, you know, disagreeing with that point at all, but he does at least have a little different perspective in that he grew up around Ty Domi and Matt Sundin and Mario Lemieux, so compared to other 21-year-olds.
I'm growing up around the game. Absolutely.
So, I don't know, something to watch with...
it's going to be interesting. Yeah, we got a lot of time here still. And again, let me stress this too. While Shane Doan has said he's open to the idea, the Coyote, and John Chyka said today that if Shane is interested in being traded, they'll talk to him about that. But
I think they owe him that.
That conversation hasn't happened yet. And you should also know that Shane Doan hasn't fully committed to that yet. He hasn't fully committed to, okay, I want to be traded to a contender. He's thinking about it, but no calls are being made on that front at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to end that conversation, just because the second Shane Doan's name gets put out there with willing to waive no trade clause, people are like, well, he's getting traded. Where's he going? It's not the way this works. And if you know Shane Doan, you know it's not that simple. He didn't just flip a switch and say, like, I want out of here. That's not the case.
Yeah.
So,
And again, when I say no calls are being made by the team or by his agent, that's not happening at this point. It's premature to talk about that. It's premature to talk about teams that might be interested in acquiring Shane Doan.
Let's quickly, before we get to Corey Hirsch and Mike Russo, we got to talk about the Washington Capitals, who are the latest Metro team to go on a 9-plus game winning streak. The streak ended. They lost 8-7 to the Penguins, and I don't know if there's a more vintage Capitals Penguins type game where there's 15 goals scored and like 9 lead changes. But I will say this before we hit that game: they had a 9-game winning streak. They beat the likes of Pittsburgh, Chicago, Columbus in that streak, Montreal. Yeah. They outscored their opposition 40-11.
Yeah, I was gonna say they beat them badly. They beat good teams badly.
And they were hammering the Penguins in that game before some switch got flipped.
That's the way a streak should end, though, isn't it?
It is.
If you're going to have a 9-game winning streak end, what a great way to have it end.
I don't have the answer to this, so I'm going to have to look it up. But how many of these long winning streaks in the Metro this season have ended at the hands of another Metro team? Because at least Columbus and Washington's have. And usually they end in the midst of somebody else's streak. That division is absolutely absurd. We're getting to the point where I haven't ever seen anything like this in the NHL.
Oh, plugging yet another one of my stories coming Sunday.
Well, at least you know when that one's coming.
The other one's coming Thursday.
Oh, okay.
What was that story again?
Ex-Coyotes goaltenders.
Not a big deal.
That's it, yeah.
Who else is on there? Grice, Dubnyk? Those are
made Chad, Johnson.
Chad Johnson.
Chad Johnson, that's right.
Yep.
Brzgalov? No.
Go.
No, okay.
Coming I guess back up
with my narrative.
If you ever write a book,
so
that should
on
be
the topic
title.
Of the game, don't ruin my narrative. That would be a great title for a book, actually. I like that.
Yeah.
For the first time, I've actually been interested in writing a book.
Don't steal, don't ruin my narrative. How's that? yeah, the Capitals hadn't lost since December 29th.
Okay, a couple of things here. Nicholas Backstrom, on track to have his best season since 2009-10. Also getting a lot of attention for his defensive play. Again, I don't know if this is a one season. What?
Number one center?
Maybe.
Oh, look at that.
That's where I was going with this.
I know where you're going with
that. That is where I was going. Wow, is he... I don't know. Do we read this as him taking a step up into that? I've always thought he's a very good player, no doubt about that, but his production has been incredible this season. He's been very good defensively. And that, in my opinion, has been one of the missing ingredients for the Capitals, inability to win the Stanley Cup.
I'm going to say something silly right now.
Oh God.
I think they're going
on it. How's it different
than normal? Yeah, well, you know,
are you going to pick the Caps?
I might throw this pen at Jamie. No, I think they're going to go on a deep run. It's tough for me to pick anybody out of the Metro.
I'm not going on that much of a limb. I mean, I know the Metro is really good.
When's the last time they went on a deep run?
Well, what's a deep run? The conference final?
At least. The conference final.
Yeah, I think they can.
Okay.
Right, so win at least two. Okay.
And that, I mean, they're matched up to play the Penguins in round one.
Any more bets.
And then Columbus in round two. No, I don't feel nearly as strong.
Every morning thinking about wearing an Eric Carlson.
You may as well just put that on.
Don't make it any more.
That's happening. The Capitals is risky. It's a proposition that I would not ever bet actual money or dignity on that. But better possession numbers.
Yes.
Nicholas Backstrom playing better. They're not the favorites this year. They are one of those teams that can't handle the expectations. It's just called for what it is. And yet they might still be the best team in the NHL.
And by the way, Brayden Holtby was on fire until that Penguins game.
Yeah.
Just on fire. He had climbed up in the top five in save percentage in the league. And this is a guy who's he's in the conversation for the Vezina again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether I put him as the third guy right now or Corey Crawford. But he's right there. So they're getting the goaltending as well.
It's a good team.
Yeah, it is a good team.
It's a very good team.
Those playoffs. I was thinking about this the other day. Imagine if we had the old-style playoffs where it was within the division. Four plays one, two plays three, and then the winners play each other. Imagine that in the Metro this year. First of all, Philadelphia wouldn't make the playoffs.
No, which I like this already.
But, you like the matchups?
I like both.
I just like the idea of Philly not being in the playoffs.
Yes, and I like the matchups. Do you realize if Philly misses the playoffs by, like, a point this year, they can look back at getting swept by the Coyotes, and that would be why they would miss the playoffs by a point or two? But, no, to your point, I don't like the setup for the playoffs. I don't like that 2 and 3. I don't like that it's constantly division rivals, which is basically the opposite of what you're saying. And I don't know. I like the 1 through 8 because you get different matchups every year, but – part of the reason I don't like it is in a year like this, it's not fair to Washington or the Rangers or Pittsburgh or Columbus, whereas Ottawa and Toronto or something, or Toronto and Boston are set to play right now in the Atlantic. So here's a free win, and we saw it last year when the Islanders and Panthers played.
It's a trade-off for developing rivalries because as any coach or player will tell you, rivalries are really born in the postseason.
Yeah,
that's when they get cemented. So you have the chance for that when you're playing a team over and over. Chicago, St. Louis, for instance, it happens over and over again. There, you develop a good hatred for the other team. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Like this year, man, a couple good teams might go out in the first round. A couple really good teams.
How about this? If the season ended right this second, Philadelphia wouldn't make the playoffs. Toronto would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned that before. Toronto and Edmonton being in the playoffs is just messing with
Bizarro world.
Not only that, Toronto has 50 points, Boston is 51. Toronto has 5 games in hand on Boston for the second place spot in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah. I want to see that. I really want to see both of those guys in the playoff, Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid. I want to see it happen.
You're definitely going to see McDavid in.
Yeah, I think Edmonton's getting in.
That's a given.
And that's a cool story in and of itself. But Toronto, you know, with all their youth. And I know people how come the Coyotes can't do that? Because they don't have Austin Matthews, that's why.
Well, yeah, also, just having youth is one thing. Having talented youth across the board and developed talented youth is a different story.
They're just a little ahead.
Yeah.
And they have Austin Matthews.
And they got Austin Matthews.
They have a franchise center.
They have Austin Matthews, okay? That's why.
Yeah, they have a franchise center, and their young guys are a little bit more developed.
Yes.
I mean, it takes time.
This is all because Austin Matthews wasn't 3 days older. Let me ask you this before we get to Corey Hirsch real quick. Buffalo. And I understand Jack Eichel's been hurt, but they're right there at the bottom of the Atlantic. Is there that much of a drop-off from McDavid and Matthews to Eichel, or is this kind of an incomplete
season?
Yes. Okay.
Yes, I think there is. think Jack Eichel's a good player. He's not a franchise center.
Because when that draft was happening, the talk was constantly, if Austin Matthews was 3 days older, he would go to whoever had the third pick.
No, he would have gone second.
Do you think so?
I do.
Because yeah. I actually talked to a couple of scouts at the time, and they were saying Matthews is almost McDavid. McDavid was always going first.
Yeah.
But yet, the general consensus that year was Eichel's more developed than Matthews.
I think it would have changed if Matthews had been in the draft and people started really digging into what scouts thought a lot.
Okay,
that's fair. I think Austin Matthews would have been the number two pick, and so you're talking about Jack Eichel being a Coyote, which wouldn't be a bad thing, obviously.
Better than what they have. But, yes. And I think you look at it, and especially when it gets down to two players like that, the second player always gets talked. Remember when Puljujarvi was being talked about? Maybe he's better. It happens all the time.
With Nico, right? It's happening this year.
No, that's true.
He's going to supplant Nolan Patrick. No, he's not. He's not going first. Nolan Patrick is going first if a team is taking.
People just get bored.
Colorado is the first pick.
They get bored. They want there to be some controversy. They want there to be some mystery to it.
Just think if Jack Eichel wasn't in that draft either. Ivan Provorov could be better than Connor McDavid. We don't really know yet. And then draft day, it takes Edmonton 1 second to race up to the podium. Not like they've done this five times in the last 10 years.
Yeah, they are rehearsed it. Yeah. To the podium. All right. They know the pathway.
They should have like
they don't need directions anymore.
It should be like when you have the fast pass if you're driving in LA where you don't have to even wait in the HOV lane. Edmonton should just get like a little elevator right up to the podium for the first pick. All right. On that note, we're going to talk to Corey Hirsch and get some of his thoughts on the goaltending around the NHL right now. All right. We're joined now by NHL analyst Corey Hirsch. You can find him on Twitter at Corey Hirsch. There's an E in Corey. I got to say, one of the funnier Twitter follows out there in the world of hockey. I've followed Corey for a while, and he's pretty hilarious. Corey, thanks for joining us. I don't even know where to start with the way the NHL is going right now, so I'm going to start with that Capitals-Penguins game the other night with 15 goals, and then last night there was 59 goals in the first seven games before those two late games. What's, in your opinion, the reason for the sudden offensive outburst here?
You know what? I wish I had an answer for you, but you know, the NHL, now they're talking about bringing these new pants in. I'm like, do we need them now? Jeez, so many goals the last couple of nights. But usually things tighten up right now. I'm wondering why that was the case last night, if it was just a weird thing. I watched the Dallas-New York Rangers game, and good Lord, if Henrik Lundqvist could stop a puck, I've never seen him that bad. It was just, I've never seen it out of him like that.
Well, that's a nice segue for us, because I that's my first question for you as a former goalie. What's going on with Lundqvist? Is this a blip, or are we finally seeing the decline of one of the greatest goalies this game has ever seen?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, did you see is baby blue on the front of his pads? Like, does he not know what Ranger blue is? Have you seen those things? Like, what is that?
Oh, fashion police to start here. Okay.
No, Lundqvist is getting older, so that's the thing. And the style that he plays, okay, so that style is taught by Benoit Laire, who taught Sean Burke, who taught Smitty, who taught all these guys. And what happens to these goalies is that they're good as they're younger, but then that's a tough thing to play, a tough style to play as you start to age, because to play that close to your goal line, you have to be really quick and your angles have to be perfect. And I think you might lose some of that, some of that speed. So we might be seeing a little bit of a decline of Lundqvist. I'm sure we'll see him come back and he'll have some good games. It might be the start of it. He may have to tweak his game a little bit to get rid of that lack of speed that he's probably losing as he ages.
In light of that, and I'm sure that the Rangers had to know this was coming at some point, but with all the retooling that they did, and they did a pretty good job when you look at what this team is accomplishing in a brutal division this year, I'm guessing that's the last thing that they were worried about at this point, at least. Maybe a couple years down the road, but now do they maybe have to worry about their goaltending heading into the postseason?
Well, I think that that's probably a concern on their mind, but you have to go back to what he's done for that organization and think that he can do it again. I would have a really strong backup plan, which is a possibility, but God, I'd be nervous because they have a good team and he is just not playing well right now. But Henrik's done this before, though, too. He's gone through it where he's been like a month where he hasn't been very good, and then he turns it on, and then all of a sudden they win the Stanley Cup. But this might be different. This might be the end of what we've seen. So if I'm the Rangers, I'd make sure that my backup is ready to go. And if they don't think that he's the right guy, then they're going to have to go and find someone here at the deadline.
Yeah, to that point, what's a fair evaluation period for goaltenders? What takes it from small sample size to an area where this is a massive concern?
That's a good question. I think with a goaltender, it's like a baseball pitcher, right? You know, once they've done it before and they've done it for you, and you always kind of keep going back to the well. And so it's typically over the course of a career for a guy like that. But you know how hockey is now is that coaches are getting hired and fired left and right, and coaches don't have the patience anymore. I mean, if a guy's not going well and the other guy's playing better, you're probably going to go to the other guy. I mean, if we looked at the sample size of my career, my first year was really good. It was the other three that weren't so good. So what part do I fall under?
Corey, you look at the Metro, and that's obviously that division's not helping Henrik Lundqvist's stats. But you look at a team like Columbus or Washington or Pittsburgh or even the Rangers, and I think on the surface, I at least look and I'm like, okay, well, the Stanley Cup representative from the East is coming out of that division. But then you realize they're all going to have to play each other in the playoffs. How do you see this shaking out in that division?
Yeah, that's almost like the Blues division now, the one that they were in with Chicago and all that. I like Columbus. I think they're a good team. I'm concerned about Bobrovsky's durability. If he goes down, they're done. They're absolutely done. You'll see them go back to being a very average hockey club. And they're a good team. But without Bobrovsky, they're not what they are. So that's a tough one. But, you got the Rangers in there, and you got some good. The Rangers are good. Pittsburgh's good. Montreal's good. And then it boils down to experience, guys that know how to win. I mean, I'd still be worried about Pittsburgh and Matt Crew. And if Sidney has a chance to win another cup in the season that he's having, I'd be nervous about them. And I talked to a couple guys from the Rangers when they were in town, and they said Pittsburgh was the best team they'd seen all year.
Oh, Luke is smiling here.
I'm always smiling, but he's smiling.
And I got drafted by the Rangers, so I'm a big Rangers guy. So it's hard for me to say that Pittsburgh's going to be the team to beat.
I can't believe I'm asking this question in the middle of January, but if I'm doing the math right, if the season ended today, the Toronto Maple Leafs would be in the playoffs. How much of this is at least real to the point where you think they're going to hang around and be in the race for the full 82 games? And second part of that, is Auston Matthews potentially exceeding your expectations at this point?
Yeah, you know what? With Toronto, I think I kind of, I mean, oddly, I'll say it, but you guys can call BS on me if you want. It's that I kind of expected them to at least be in the hunt. I don't think they'll make the playoffs. I think there you'll see some other teams step up and really start to take over that that last position that with the experience that they have and all that. So, but I expect them to be able to do some damage and cause some havoc there in that division. But Auston Matthews, I think we all thought he would be good. I mean, we're 22 goals here. We're in January. I mean, he's going to score over 30 easily. So that would, to me, I thought I would say, he might get 20, 25. He's going to get 30, 35, possibly 40. So I think he's exceeded everyone's expectations, and that's why they're where they're at. And they've got a couple other good players, too. Marner, the Nylander kid. It's been good. It's good to see.
And I got to piggyback on what Luke said he can't believe we're in January and he's talking about the Leafs being in the playoffs. Edmonton is in the playoffs right now, too.
I know, right?
Edmonton hasn't made the playoffs in a decade. How real do you see that? And in light, I guess, of what's happening in the Western Conference, too, with maybe some other teams being down, how real do you see the possibility of the Oilers making the playoffs?
Yeah, I like the Oilers. When you watch them here, I like how fast they play. I like how quick they move the puck. Eberle's got to get scoring. He hasn't scored much in the last, I don't think he's had a goal in the last 14 games or something. So they have to get him going. But anytime you have a player like Connor McDavid, Auston Matthews, your Sidney Crosbys, those teams win cups one day. And, Edmonton hit. They finally hit on a superstar player on McDavid. So they are very real. Anytime you have that guy in your lineup, he's just so much better and sees the ice so much better than other players that, he's going to have them in a position to win and be a contender.
And going back to the Metro for a second, the Capitals just wrapped up that big streak they were on. When is it time for us to feel comfortable saying they're a cup contender again? Because we've seen this team dominate the regular season and then not quite get to where they need to go.
Yeah, and that's all a learning process. You know what? It really is true when they talk about guys and learning how to win a Stanley Cup. Like, it's great that you can get there. And that's why teams, they get there, and then they lose out in the first round, or they lose out in the second round, because you really have to know what it takes. And I didn't really know that until I was with the Rangers in 94 when they won the Stanley Cup, and they brought in all those old guys like McTavish and Messier, and they brought in Adam Graves, and just so many players. And when you're around that atmosphere, those guys know what it takes to win a seven-game series. And when you're playing against someone that's a great player, but they, you know, they haven't really seen it before, you know, they can step it up a notch when they need to step it up a notch. Chicago can do that. Kane, Taze. I saw an interview with Kane where Kane said, you know, after game three, I believe, I was with St. Louis, and it was game three, and they were down 2-1 in the series. And he was like, okay, now the real series starts, the last four games. And he was right. Then Chicago just took over the series. Those players just took right over. Point is that those guys know how to win, and they know when to turn it on in a series, when they can pull it back a little bit.
Well, Corey, I'm glad you brought that up, because that just changed my question. We've had a running debate on this show, and I'm one of those people that thinks Chicago, who, by the way, is leading the West right now, is going to be able to find a new level when they hit the playoffs. Now, they're not the same team that maybe they were a couple years ago when they won the Cup, but how do you see them faring once the playoffs start in the Western Conference?
We saw what happened with St. Louis last year. St. Louis had a really good team, and it went right down to the wire, because those players know how to win, and they know what they're doing. And mentally, they just wear you down and wear you down and wear you down. This year, Chicago, it is a little different, but they seem to be going on that two-year cycle every second year. And it's so hard because the playoffs are so grueling that it's hard to win every year now. I would expect Chicago to take another run at it. I really do. I like their team. I think even having Darling as a backup, I mean, how good has he been for a backup if something goes down? So they're definitely a contender for me. I wouldn't just hand it to Minnesota right now.
Anything surprise you or jump out at you from the first half of this season?
Just in the last little while, I would say the goaltending injuries, the lack of depth at goaltending for some teams, Budaj in LA actually coming into LA and really saving their season. Things like that. I would say mostly it revolves around the goaltending. That's kind of what has surprised me, that all these injuries we're having, but there's some guys step up and you're seeing some organizations that have the depth and some that don't.
We're going to get a chance to talk to Mike Rousseau from the Star Tribune Minneapolis soon, but I wanted to get your thoughts on Devan Dubnyk's season. I know he had an off night the other night, but he still has a chance to set the highest save percentage for a single season in NHL history, which I know the circumstances are a little different, but that's still an incredible record. Your thoughts on what he's done this season and how real this is, how much of it is the team in front of him versus what Dubnyk is doing?
Am I allowed to say a little swear on your podcast? Is that okay?
Oh, we love that stuff. That's what drives
me. Devan Dubnyk should be kissing Schomburg's ass because he saved his career. And
that might be the title of our podcast now.
Right? It should be. Because he came to Phoenix, he was done. He was dead in the water. Nobody wanted that guy. And Schomburg took him and basically showed him how a big goalie needs to play. And I wouldn't have been able to do that for Devan Dubnyk because I didn't play that style. He came to Phoenix, found the right guy, the right coach, and has taken off ever since then. So that's my opinion. Now, Devan Dubnyk's been amazing. He's had to stop the puck. He's had to do all that stuff himself. But Schomburg gave him the blueprint for what he needed to do, and he took it and he ran with it, and he got on a team in Minnesota. Yes, they are good defensively, but at the same time, again, I'd be kissing Schomburg's ass if I was him.
It's definitely the quote of the year. You know, along those lines, I mean, how much thought do you think a goalie puts into the situation that they're going to when they look to sign as a free agent? I mean, sometimes they're just getting traded or whatever, but he ended up in the right spot with just the right goalie coach, whereas, you know, say a guy like Semyon Varlamov in Colorado is having a terrible year this year, and yet maybe Schomburg wouldn't be the perfect fit for somebody like that.
Right. No, exactly. Like, I would probably be more suited to coach a goalie like Varlamov for me, for my style that I played.
Yeah.
So it's kind of finding that match. You know, I was good for Brian Elliott in St. Louis because I was able to give him what my thoughts were, and it worked for him.
if Brian Elliott went to Sean Burke, well, maybe it wouldn't have worked for him, right? It's a different, a little different style. But I don't think at that point Devin Dubnyk had put any thought into it. I think he was just trying to get a job. I don't think there was many people out there that wanted him, you know. And I think he was at his, at the end of his rope. And sometimes, you know what, the hockey gods give you one back because he's a good guy and he's a good teammate. And, you know, he's done what he's done.
Corey, you know, we live in a sports world now where everybody's very hyper aware of prospects, whether it's in hockey or baseball or any of the sports. Goaltenders, you know, specifically at that position, around what age should fans look for a goaltender to be ready to make an NHL impact? It's typically longer than a forward prospect.
Yeah. Good question. Typically between 26 and 34, it's kind of like the prime years is what you'll get. And then after that, there seems to be a bit of a drop-off. Unfortunately for me, I was way better when I was 30 than I was when I was 23, and I got all my opportunities when I was 23. So it's like you go from prospect to suspect pretty quick if you don't, you know, if you don't get it done. But those are the best years because you've seen it. Goaltending is all about experience and what you've seen and what you've, you know what to do in certain situations. You know how to handle things. You don't freak out when the team gets, you know, things get hairy. You just kind of keep going. And that's why it's like, again, it's like pitchers in baseball. It's like, you know, quarterbacks. It's all experience. And then just being able to control those anxieties you get as a player.
Corey, last one before we let you go. Just real quick, any young goalies around the league catch your eye as guys that you think are going to step into to pretty prominent roles in the next couple of years?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Gibson and Anaheim is already. I mean, can we even say that? I like Thatcher Demko, Vancouver prospect. He's a young guy. I like Hellebuck's been pretty good in Winnipeg. Those are probably the guys that I like right now at this point. We've got a lot of really good goalies. Everybody's looking for that top five, though, that Carey Price, the guy that can, you know, the Jonathan Quick, the guy that can win you a Stanley Cup. And there aren't that many out there. So if you get one, you got to hang on to them.
Good stuff, Corey. We enjoyed having you on. I'm sure we're going to call you again here down the line.
Awesome. Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Corey.
Thanks a lot. I had some interesting stuff to say there, especially with in regards to Lundqvist at the beginning of that. I mean, if you look at Henrik Lundqvist, I'm one of those people that at the end of – I'll still be on the Henrik Lundqvist bandwagon when he's past his prime, when he's done, you know, whatever. When he's not as good, I'm still going to think he's better just because he's been so good for so long. But that's interesting what he says. You know, he talked about the actual goaltending style maybe isn't conducive to having success into your late 30s or, you know, obviously early 40s, especially when you're in New York and you're going to be that scrutinized.
It's so rare that you hear insights like that you hear for the first time.
Yeah.
It's like, huh, I never thought about that before. That's very interesting. I'd like to ask more people about that. That could be what we're seeing here. But I agree with you in terms of Lundqvist. He gets a little more leash than we're giving him right now.
Oh, yeah, I still think he's fine.
Yeah, he might not be. This might be the start of his decline, but I don't think we can call it yet on Henrik Lundqvist because, as Corey said, he's done this before. He's had short periods where it looked like, whoa, what's going on? And then he turns it on in the playoffs, and suddenly you can't get anything past him again.
Yeah, this is rare territory for him. He's one of the few goaltenders who you can't look at a specific season and say, wow, he really bottomed out. I mean, every goaltender either had a major injury season or completely bottomed out, and I think we've talked about on the show where, you know, Carey Price earlier in the season where I said Carey Price might be the best goaltender in hockey, but maybe the most trusted one would be Henrik Lundqvist because he's never struggled. Now he's struggling, and now we get to see, is this the beginning of the end or is it just a blip? And you start to wonder, you know, as Corey mentioned, you know, he's what, 34 now? Maybe this is the beginning of the end of a Hall of Fame-ish level career for Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah, and boy, that would be a it would be bad timing for the Rangers. Just when they did this nice job of retooling, and yeah. I still think there are flaws with the Rangers, and I still think they're in trouble when they hit the playoffs. But they did a pretty good job of remaking this roster on the fly and infusing some youth. Imagine if they have to worry about goaltending now and it's Antti Raanta that carries you into the playoffs.
Well, it doesn't help that Jimmy Vesey apparently retired at some point in the last month and didn't tell anybody either.
That's part of that early in the season when he was hot. We were saying, they're going to slow down. He's going to hit the rookie wall at some point. And well, he's hit it big time. It's just like it knocked him on his back.
I'm not going to just transition over to Mike Russo without mentioning that Corey Hirsch absolutely agreed with me on the Chicago Blackhawks. And when did we have Scott Powers on? Was that 2 weeks ago?
I know Jamie wasn't here. I'd like to point out, Luke, that with all due respect, the Minnesota Wild currently lead the
Western Conference. You're right, because they have games in hand. But
four of them,
The point is, as we sit here...
Hey, don't rain on his parade, okay?
I'm sorry.
Don't let facts get in the way of Luke's rant.
As everybody sits here and talks about how Chicago...
Luke clicks on that fake Facebook news you're hearing so much about. That's what Luke does.
What was the Caps-Blackhawks score the other day?
How much of an impact does that have in the playoffs? Even with all the – and you guys have convinced me, and I've watched the Blackhawks closer, and I'm fully on board. It's not like I was ever denying that their depth is not an issue or that they don't have other problems. But even with all that, they're still tied for the most points in the Western Conference. And that's two guests in successive weeks that have completely agreed with me without even knowing what my stance was.
And again, I hear you, but I do think it is a blind belief in this accomplished core that they can just do it. You can turn it on in the playoffs. The Blackhawks are a two-line team. They're a two-line team, and their underlying numbers are not good. We had Carolyn Wilkie on this program, by the way, who was saying the Blackhawks are not a good team.
Well, she didn't say they weren't a good team.
She did, actually.
She said they're not as
a good team this year.
Yeah, but
they're not a good team with an excellent goaltender.
Yes. Yeah, and she was on Twitter the other day talking about that as well, how Corey Crawford deserves to be a Vezina finalist because he's been under siege this year and he's the only reason. We're giving you a big-time shout-out here, Carolyn.
Yeah,
thank you for helping me out.
Cheap plug Friday on FanRagSports.com. You can read all about Corey Crawford and why he should be considered for the Vezina more.
Oh, I thought Cheap Plug Friday was a new feature on the podcast, but I guess not.
Now maybe Corey Crawford can be one of the reasons that they advance. And as we talked about, the Western Conference hardly has any teams that
are
just screaming.
That's the whole basis.
We're Stanley Cup
argument.
Worthy, you know.
The whole basis of my argument is that they are not in the Metropolitan Division.
Agreed, but I know they haven't done it. But the Wild are a good hockey team. I'm not ready just to dismiss them because they don't have experience going to a cup.
And they're coached by Bruce Boudreau.
I'm not dismissing them either.
You just got to stay out of Game Sevens.
Yes.
Or Games Seven.
A Wild Blackhawks Game 7. I think we're all leaning the same direction in that specific scenario. But you're right. The point on Minnesota is well taken, and we're going to get more insight right now from Mike Russo, who knows the Minnesota Wild better than anybody. And this is a team that is showing signs of maybe being better than they were in years past. All right, joining us on the show now for the second time ever. So he's officially a friend of the show. He's reached that status. Mike Russo of the Star Tribune. You can find him on Twitter, at Russo's Trib. Talks Minnesota Wild hockey. He knows it better than anybody. So I'll start off with the simplest question I could possibly ask you, Michael. Is this team for real?
I think so. I think if you saw last night's game, you probably wouldn't think so. They actually played a great first two periods last night, and I thought Corey Schneider was outstanding and really kept the Devils in fighting distance. And Devils scored a power play goal late in the period that gave them life, and then the Wild is... To quote Bruce Boudreau, we're a train wreck in the third period and played, to quote Bruce Boudreau, dumb hockey. And really what was uncharacteristic is that it was Eric Staal, Zach Parise, and Jason Pominville, three veterans, all make up the top line that were the train wreck. They were awful, not just offensively, but we're on the ice for all three goals in the third period, and we're starring roles in all three goals, the last goal in particular. All three got caught 4-on-2 the other way, and next thing you know, three of them are defending nobody. And so, that's a lot of negativity that I just said for one game, considering this team was 17-1-1 in the previous 19. So, you know, they've beaten a lot of great teams. They've gone on the road to do it. They, up until last night, had played the fewest home games in the league and yet are leading the Western Conference. So I think that it's hard to let one game overshadow everything the team accomplished the last couple months. But they've got to get back on the horse tomorrow against Arizona.
Yeah, to your point, this team has lost three games since December 1st, which is just insane to talk about. Mike, could some of this just be a simple letdown to the streak, to the big win in Chicago over the Blackhawks when they were able to take over the division lead?
I do think so. Devin Dubnyk wasn't very good last night either, and that was uncharacteristic as well. And you know, usually Dubnyk covers up the stakes, and last night he wasn't able to do that. I thought two of the goals in particular were stoppable. And the third goal, I know a lot of the last goal, the winning goal, I think a lot of Wild fans would have thought that it was stoppable too. But I look at that as complete breakdown and just horrific defense in front of them. So I do think it was a letdown, and what has been shocking is that this team hasn't had a letdown for 2 months. They've debunked all the trends. They saw their 12-game winning streak cracked against Columbus. Columbus winds up losing 4 of their 6 after their winning streak ends, and the Wild wound up getting 11 of the next 12 points. And, you know, they've constantly come home after long road trips and won games. And, you know, all the old trends that you hear in hockey that this team has not fallen into trap of. And yesterday was another one. Everybody talked about how this was a trap game coming in, but the Wild hadn't fallen victim to that really until since November. And so last night, whether you want to say they fell victim to it or not, you know, they absolutely let down. And so now, this is a team, they've wound up being so good on the road that you do have to wonder now, with a string of home games coming up, how good they will be. Because sometimes it's harder to get on long winning streaks when you're playing at home constantly and you never get on the road. And so I'll be interested to see if the Wild can get their game back together. They played, starting last night, 13 of their next 18 at home. And while normally that would be a situation where you think they get on a huge streak, sometimes that's not always the case.
Michael, Eric Staal leads the team in goals and total points. Obviously, when you sign a guy like that, you expect something from him. They got him at a pretty decent price, though. Did they expect anything like this?
Well, I know they hoped it. You know, that he definitely looked like he took a step back last year and the last couple of years. And he's already, he needs 1 point to already eclipse everything he did last season in 83 games, actually, because he played one more than the maximum because he was traded to the Rangers. So, I mean, you know, he's had a tremendous start to the season. I think last year, you know, I will say this. I think that Parise and Pominville have really struggled this year, and I think that there's going to have to come a point where Boudreaux puts Eric Staal with the best line mates and Eric Staal could be successful, rather than always putting Eric Staal with two guys that he's trying to get their games together. And I think though it was proof last night that that it's now really affecting Eric Staal's game. And so, you know, I really think that Eric Staal could have a lot more points if he had just consistently stayed with guys like Niederreiter and Coyle, who had been so good with him back in December. So, but, you know, really Boudreaux's looking at the big picture here, and he wants this team to get everybody running on the same page. And Parise and Pominville have had tough starts to the season, and so he's trying to get them going by putting them with Staal and not wanting to break up the Koivu line. But it's sometimes to the detriment of Eric.
Mike, I want to ask you a big-picture question, and I'm sure Eric Staal's renaissance factors into this, but how much has Bruce Boudreaux meant to this team, and how can you tangibly measure that impact?
Yeah, I think you can measure it because they haven't had a crazy swoon yet, that they get on these winning streaks and haven't really been affected at all adversely, negatively, where a lot of times in the last couple of years it seemed like the Wild would start losing games and Mike Yeo could do nothing to really turn it around. I do think that you look at the amount of players that have had big years, that has to go to credit Boudreaux. I mean, you look at, you know, I thought they needed 2 of their 4 or 5 young kids to really step up and have big years this year, and 4 of them are really playing great, and Granlund, Coyle, Niederreiter, and Zucker. And so, you know, I think that goes to Boudreaux putting them in positions to succeed. You know, under Mike, and I'm a big Mike Yeo guy, but I do think that Mike fell into the trap of always deferring to the veterans here and you know, rarely really mixing up the personnel, the power play units. If it was a 6-on-5 or 5-on-6 in the last minute or two of the game, you always knew exactly what forward's going to be out here, out where, you know, in Bruce Boudreaux's case, he'll go with whoever's playing great. You know, the Wild had a game in Nashville last month where Jordan Schrader, a minor league journeyman, wound up being elevated to the first line and then also played in overtime and assisted on the winning goal. And that's stuff that never would have happened under Mike. So they're an aggressive, hard forechecking team that also scores a lot of goals off the rush. And you guys know, especially, the Minnesota Wild are not known for being an offensive team, and they lead the conference in goals. And so, you know, I think that has to go to and they lead the conference in goals without a superstar. So, you know, that has to go to the coaching that I think Bruce has brought.
You know, with as strong as they've been in the first half of the season, you look back to 3 years ago and 2 years ago. Is this now another step forward in that progression after taking a notable step back last year?
Yeah, they did. You're right. I mean, they took a really, I think that Chuck Fletcher, the GM of this team, called it a huge disappointment last year, and I think they are taking a progression. Their goal, and I think this comes with another thing with Boudreau coming here, with Eric Staal coming here, is the expectation of this team is to go out and win the division. And I would have laughed if they said that before the season, and basically they did say it before the season, and I did laugh. You just look at the Wild, and you don't think that they have a chance to win a division with Chicago and Dallas, who was great last year, and St. Louis, and yet that has been their expectation from day one this year. And here they are at the top of the conference. They're tied with Chicago in points, but they've played four fewer games, and they have a legitimate chance, especially with all the home games that I brought up, that they put themselves in position, if they could stay healthy, to have that possibility. So I do think that, you know, but again, division or not, as you just mentioned, I mean, their goal is to go and win a cup. And last year they wound up, after 2 years in a row of being in the second round, losing in the first round to Dallas pretty easily. And this team's objective is to finally make that step to at least get to round three and potentially round four. And we'll see if they have the ability to do that.
Mike, in terms of goals allowed, they're number two in the NHL, number one in the West. I know a lot of that is Devan Dubnyk, but how much of an impact has Scott Stevens had on this defense?
Huge. I mean, I think he's been on, you know, I'm working on a big story on him right now, and I think that he has made an incredible impact to their penalty kill, to their blue line, to getting Ryan Suter to kind of dial things back and not have to play 30 minutes a night. I really think he's been, you know, and his communication skills are great. He absolutely commands respect. Everybody, you know, these guys are all, even though they have a very young blue line, they're all old enough to remember Scott Stevens and how great of a player that he was. So I think it's been big. You know, I will say they have taken an absolute step back since about Christmas time. They've given up four goals in a game about six or seven times now in the last 10 or 11. And so they've got to get back to their bread and butter. And a lot of it is goaltending. I mean, Dubnyk has not been, you know, he had a tough little stretch, which was amazing because he was so consistent the first 27 games, hadn't given up more than three goals. Then he gave up four goals in the game, three in a row, and got his game back on track in Anaheim against Chicago the other night, the great game that he played against Montreal. But last night it was, you know, one of the worst games he's played this year. And so, you know, as I'm sure he's going to be motivated with Arizona coming back, he loves, you know, playing against that team, or at least since he left Arizona. I know that he's still very close to Mike Smith, has the immense amount of respect for Dave Tippett, and so you know that he'll get his game back on track tomorrow.
We just had Corey Hirsch on the program a little earlier, who said that Devan Dubnyk should be, quote, kissing Sean Burke's ass for where he is at this point in his career. I just want to get a sense from you, dive in a little deeper into Dubnyk's play. How much of it is the system? How much of it is him taking another step up? What do you see? What's the read on who he is right now? Does he, as he reaches that elite status?
I think he has. I mean, you know, it actually, look, the Wild have a great system and they protect him really well. But, you know, sometimes it just drives me crazy when people say that the goalie is just the product of the system. No, Devan Dubnyk makes incredible saves, you know, all the time to keep teams in. Yes, maybe he doesn't have to face the 30 chances that certain goalies have to face a game. But you still are getting scoring chances every game and you got to make those big saves. And he's been outstanding. And especially in the first month and a half of the season, he had, you know, where Devan Dubnyk is so strong is mentally. You know, there earlier in this season, this team wasn't scoring goals. They weren't winning every night. He was very close to falling below 500 despite leading the league in goals against average and save percentage. Yet he never let that bother him. I'm sure it bothered him, but he never let himself crack mentally. And the fear all the time when you have a goalie that's playing great but not getting victory is that eventually it affects him to the point that his game falls apart. And that never happened to Dubnyk. And I think it's because he's such a laid-back guy, a laid-back guy that lets things just fall right off his back. And so I think he's been outstanding. But what Corey Hirsch said, I could tell you that if you sat down with Devan Dubnyk right now, he would absolutely credit Sean Burke for a lot of, you know, his success. There's no doubt that there's a lot of gratefulness to everything that the Arizona Coyotes did for him to get his career back on track. He was so far, so close to being out of this league, and the Coyotes gave him the faith and offered him a lifeline, and he, to his credit, took advantage of it. And I know he was blown away and shocked when the Coyotes traded him, because he thought that, you know, he had created, you know, he was playing so well there that he was going to wind up staying there for a long time. But luckily, again, he's so mentally strong that he came here and took full advantage of it, and all the kudos to him.
You mentioned Zach Parise's struggles earlier. What's the internal feeling about why he's struggling and whether or not they think this is a short or long-term issue?
Well, you know, I don't know. They're concerned. I can tell you that he's got 8 more years left on his contract. So you know, they have reason to be concerned. And he's just not skating very well and you know, definitely not producing the way that we're all accustomed to seeing. He had a season-ending back injury last year, a herniated disc. He says he's healthy, but I think that stuff just, you know, slows you down. And then he's had some lower body issues this year. He's been playing with a upper body thing for a while now, and he's had strep throat 3 times this season. So I think that he's just, you know, what's really tough is that it looked like on the West Coast trip that he got his game completely back. He had points in all 3 games. He had a 3-point night in San Jose, where he was just tremendous in the third period. He scored a last-minute tying goal in L.A. to salvage a point, assisted on the tying goal in Anaheim. And so, you know, it looked like the old Zach Parise was back, and then he hasn't had a point in the last 4 games. And last night, again, was a -3. So, you know, he's got the Wild need him. And last night was proof of it. That was a game where, you know, he could have made a difference, and he made a difference in the, negatively.
All right, Mike, last question from us before we let you get out of here. The lingering question, both for the Minnesota Wild and for Bruce Boudreau, playoffs. What do you see?
Yep.
What can we expect? It's obviously going to be a bigger and bigger question as we get closer to April.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know what? He understands that. I mean, he volunteers it. He joked yesterday. Somebody asked him, what does it mean at this point in the season to be so close to even leading the NHL in points? And he said, you know what, I've learned very much that it only matters what you do in your last game. And, you know, he's well aware that if the Wild are ever fortunate enough to get to a Game 7, it's going to be a huge storyline. Now, luckily for Bruce, there are many more players and staff members on the Wild that have won Game 7s and that might be able to offset his terrible record in Game 7s. I mean, the Wild have never lost a Game 7 in franchise history. And they also have Eric Staal, who won a pretty big Game 7 in 2006. And they have Scott Stevens, who's pretty good in them, too. So I don't think that'll be a big, big thing. But, you know, look, the thing is that there's nothing you can do about it now. Everybody, you know, every time I tweet about the Wild success right now, I got the naysayers in Anaheim or just, you know, hockey fans that follow me on Twitter that make the little joke, well, you know, wait till the playoffs. Well, look, there's nothing they can do now. They got to get to the playoffs first. The goal is to get home ice advantage in the playoffs, so then the goal is to then make a step as an organization and him as a coach. But you're right. I mean, he's never been in a Stanley Cup final. He's only been to 1 conference final, and that will forever follow him until he breaks that trend.
It's Michael Russo. Again, you can find him on Twitter, at RussoSTrib. Mike, thanks so much for the time and the insight. Enjoy the rest of the season, okay?
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
Good stuff there, as always, from Michael Russo. A couple of things that he touched on that stand out to me. I guess not the least of which is the fact that Zach Parise had strep throat 3 times this year. I mean, at what point do you just kind of
stop kissing people?
Sorry. Not where I was going with it.
Fun fact, not so fun fact, once when I was in Florida, I had 12 strep throats in a year.
What?
Yeah, that was the thing that actually happened.
Really? Like one every month?
Sometimes a couple, multiple in a month, and then it was bad.
And then you just went back to Florida like last week, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't get it then.
Oh, look at that.
It's probably why I'm out of Florida.
12 times in a year.
Yes.
And nobody thought, wow, that's unusual.
Oh, no, they thought that was, wow, that was unusual.
Did we start exploring reasons why, maybe?
That's why I glow now, with just all the antibiotics I took in my youth.
Like change environments?
Yeah, I moved
like
to Arizona.
Personality.
I got my tonsils removed, all that fun stuff.
Well, but
it's not fun. What I'm saying, it's not fun.
It makes
an experienced strep throater, throatee?
Throater? I don't know.
Whatever.
That's just...
It's not fun. Not good.
But if Parise's had 3 this year and he's banked up, like, is there a point at the season where maybe you sit him for a week right before the playoffs and just say, hey, buddy, just get healthy here so we can have you at full strength for the playoffs? Because he has 8 goals.
This is penicillin. Take this.
Yeah, I guess maybe they could do that as well. The Minnesota Wild, if you look at point differential in the Western Conference, which I'm sure you guys have done, let's see, the second best point differential in the West right now is San Jose at +15. A lot of teams are negative.
Goal
differential, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was confused there.
Minnesota is...
That happens easily, actually.
Plus 45.
Yeah, it's insane. It's
not bad.
And the Scott Stevens thing, I mean, the reason I asked that is that is something different this year. I know Bruce Boudreau is a different thing, and having Eric Staal is different and all that. And the more I watch Minnesota, the more I think they really are capable of winning some playoff series this year. But Scott Stevens, if that defense is really going to be this much better, that's different.
To get back to something Jamie asked Mike earlier, if you look at Minnesota over a bigger picture view, what they did 2 years ago, what they did 3 years ago, this does look like a progression, and last year maybe was the anomaly where they took a step back. This looked like a team that was on the rise for a while. Now, Mike did say they don't have the superstars, but like Columbus, it's really nice to believe that a team like this could have success in the NHL. You know, I know a lot of people joke about a Wild Blue Jackets Cup final. I think it'd be great because it could just change everyone's perspective on what you need to do to win a cup.
And the Blue Jackets specifically, Minnesota might be the Western Conference Blue Jackets, team that had just obviously Columbus had a much worse season last year than Minnesota did. But looking at a team there, if this season came last year, we would have said, this is a natural progression of how these teams are going. Because they had that one step back, I think people are not believing what they're seeing, even though, like Craig said, you take a step back, you look at a 3 or 4 year window, it actually makes sense and it's actually sustainable.
How about this, too? You know, Parisi has the 8 goals so far. Pominville has 6 goals. I don't know how you guys look at this, but for me, I look at that and say, these guys are proven commodities in this league. It's not like they're 45 years old. Maybe this team gets even better in the playoffs. Maybe. If just one of them gets going.
What's crazy right now, if I'm reading this right, they're playing LA in the first round. Jonathan Quick will be back. The Kings probably would be healthy by then.
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be a...
I mean, LA could climb. There's not a lot of distance. Well, there's a fair amount of distance, between LA and San Jose for third place in the Pacific. Now, Calgary's only 3 points clear. They could catch Calgary and end up one higher and then end up playing. Yeah.
Yeah,
that could change, but wow, right now that would be a heck of a first round test for the Minnesota Wild playing a healthy LA Kings team that has won 2 cups recently.
Well, and that's the thing with LA. You know, we've discussed them in the past on what our opinions are in terms of how good they would be in a playoff series. But the bottom line is, losing Jonathan Quick for as long as they've lost him is going to throw off the playoff picture in the West. Because if you're Minnesota, you shouldn't have to play LA in the first round. You should have an easier matchup. I know there's no easy matchups in the playoffs, but if you ask the Wild when April 15th or whatever rolls around, I don't think they want to face Jonathan Quick in round one of the playoffs if that happens. There's other teams I'm sure they would pick over LA to have to go up against. If they finish with the top rank, well, I meant playoff teams.
Everybody's chosen that's the team I think everybody would want to face, but there's no way the Canucks are making the playoffs.
Do you think the Canucks go out and make a crazy trade for a rental?
I wouldn't put it past them.
I could see the Canucks doing that, yes.
I wouldn't
look at us. We're a playoff team. We're going to make a move at the trade deadline.
3 points out of a playoff spot.
To further weaken our future for a first-round exit. Actually, won't even be a first-round exit because we won't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
How happy are you for that player that gets traded to Vancouver and you're like, okay, cool.
Okay.
And now I'm gonna...
Do we know Shane Doan wants to go to Vancouver?
Well, didn't Vancouver want him? That's what got me thinking this a couple years ago. I don't want Shane Doan going to Vancouver. Let's just make that very, very, very clear.
There are a lot of teams still in this mix too, right? Nashville, Dallas could both go on a run. Those are teams that when their games are right, should be playoff teams.
When Jamie Benn's not breaking 10 sticks over his knee.
One thing, not to go too far off, but what's in Winnipeg, when do we start talking about why that team continues? I mean, we know why that team continues to underperform. It starts and ends in net, but are they going to do something about that? Or are they? I have just a feeling like Maurice is going to take the fall and they're going to they're going to say, oh yeah, well, we'll be okay despite the fact we have 2 terrible goaltenders.
I think you can hear that in his voice when he talks, that he's very concerned about his immediate future.
Are we sure that Hellebuyck is terrible, or is he just still young?
He's terrible
young?
Right now.
Okay.
I don't think he will be in the future, but right now what they're getting is they're getting terrible goaltending no matter who they throw in the net.
Yeah, and they're starting Andre Pavlich tonight, who hasn't played a game all season. And, you know, they're still in the playoff hunt. They've dropped 4 in a row, and they've been without Patrick Laine for 5.5 games. So, and in those 5.5 games, they've got 1 win. So that's something, but you're right. I mean, the goaltending has been an issue ever since they got to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Really,
it was a problem in Atlanta, too.
Yeah, it's always been an issue. Mm. Wow, look at that. And, I mean, playing in the Central, I don't know, do you guys think that division, it's not going to be the best in hockey this year, but it's entirely possible in the second half everybody picks it back up except Colorado.
Yeah, there's a lot of, that's what I was just saying. There's a lot of hockey, so let's see what Nashville and Dallas do over the second half of the season. Let's see if they make moves, too, roster moves.
By the way, fun fact, since the Central Division came around, what's the highest you guys think the Minnesota Wild have finished in that division in the last 3 years? So I guess this will be year four of that.
I guess I'd say third, since you're asking the question.
Fourth.
Really?
Fourth, fifth.
Wow.
So even though that 98 and 100 point season, mm-hmm. they were never anything above a wild card team.
That's how good this division
see
was, yeah.
What happens when they get four home games?
Jamie wasn't here, what was it, 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the Metro and basically how the fourth place team in the Metro's on pace to have 111 points this year. And there's going to be two teams on pace for over 120, which has happened, what, six times in NHL history?
It's insane.
That's absurd. All right, any closing
thoughts?
About
it in the, yeah, actually, I wanted to throw this one thing out before, because Jamie's back now. We were talking, I had a column this last Sunday on handing out the midseason awards, and I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on,
okay.
on well, we don't have to go through all these trophies. I'm not sure how much interest there is in the Selke Trophy, and it should just be renamed the Patrice Bergeron Trophy anyway, so that's who's winning it again for me this year, because his possession numbers are ridiculous this season.
Carolyn's putting together a project where she's got some stat she's making, and she was looking at at Selke and a few things. She said, "Do you know what formula that she had popped out the best two-way forward this season? Connor McDavid.
Really?
Because he is playing a ton of minutes on the PK as well, which I forgot about.
Yeah, because he's the threat for a shorthanded goal on every power play. Yeah, no, it is.
I get the guy with the speed that can get the puck out of the zone, and then maybe do something with it. But, could continue going. For Selke, yeah, that's so tough. Because we know it's going to be a center because you're legally not allowed to win if you play wing.
Right, and in defense of that argument, I get it because centers have much more responsibility in the defensive zone. I get it. They have to go down low. They have to do a lot more things than the wings have to do. But there have been some wings that have been so good, like Marian Hossa, we talked about in the past. That's interesting, actually, on Connor McDavid. In watching Connor McDavid, I still don't think his defensive game, all the details of it, are up to snuff of a Selke Trophy winner yet. I think Sidney Crosby is still the best all-around player in the game.
Agreed.
But would be interesting if he reaches that level of play where he also becomes the best defensive player in the game. Because he's going to be the best offensive player.
That's when you transcend. I mean, if you can be a 100-plus point player and play just effective defense, I mean, that's...
We haven't seen a lot of those guys ever.
Ryan Kessler, though, might actually get that Selkie. He's been having a really good season.
Kessler's having a fantastic year.
That whole line has been incredible.
Was it Cogliano and Silverberg with Kessler? That's been their best line.
Silverberg? The F is silent.
Oh, yes.
All right. Who's going to win the scoring title, Rocket Richard Trophy?
I'm going to go with McDavid slightly over the Pittsburgh centers. Ever so slightly.
Going with Sid.
Wait, are you going goals here?
Yeah.
Oh, goals, I'll still go with Crosby.
Okay.
I'm afraid of injuries.
Well, now I am, too.
The Pittsburgh centers do tend to get hurt from time to time.
But so does McDavid.
Well, yeah, but McDavid got hurt once.
He
and
did.
Crosby and Malkin have been hurt for periods every season since, the Reagan administration.
But if you're going pure goals, Crosby's got a pretty nice lead on everybody right now.
I remember the Reagan administration.
Do you?
What was the question?
Oh, boy.
All right, Calder Trophy. I already gave my thoughts on this one.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with Laine's injury now.
Yeah.
But also because he plays center. I made this argument in a story recently. When you think about expectations, exceeding expectations in Toronto.
Yeah.
As a franchise center.
When you've been known for a year as the number one pick.
Right. I'm blown away by what Austin Matthews has done.
We are spoiled by McDavid and Matthews.
Yeah.
I kind of feel bad for Nolan Patrick because he's not those players.
Don't I
but said, people are going to try to put that, well, these last two number one picks had all the hype, and this is what they did immediately.
Well, really, I mean, a lot of the number one picks over recent years, I mean, Stamkos, Tavares, maybe they're not what McDavid and Matthews were coming out.
McKinnon had a very good rookie season, but they weren't like this.
And then he joined the AHL team, apparently.
Who's down ballot on that, on the call for you guys?
I like this new, hip term. Who's down ballot? Zach Werenski.
To me, the interesting thing about this is where Murray ends up landing.
Yeah.
I feel like there are going to be ballots he's left off completely, that he is not even considered.
Because they still aren't aware of the fact that he's a rookie. And when I wrote this column, he was fifth in the league in save percentage. Yeah. Fifth.
This must have been before he gave up seven goals to Washington.
Let's say
and still won.
Again, don't ruin my narrative.
Sorry.
Hope he gave up, what, eight?
It was don't take my nerve. Yeah.
Who's third on this? Yeah. Matt Murray, is it Zach Werenski?
It depends how long Laine is out. I mean, if he comes back in a week, he'll be second.
It right, should so be
three
Murray.
Guys from Toronto that can be on this ballot.
It should be Murray, but I think it's going to be Werenski.
Just think, I mean, if you're letting all the media types vote on it, maybe it'll be like an all-star situation where they just vote in all the Toronto players just so we can all say Toronto over and over again.
Okay, Norris Trophy.
Craig's favorite.
Eric Karlsson, obviously, right? No?
No, I mean, I don't think he can even make that argument this year.
But I do like your pick so far right now, Brent Burns. I don't think we talk – I mean, for all the talk Eric Karlsson gets, we don't talk enough about how great Brent Burns has been the last few years.
I thought Burns was – Burns, I think, at the moment is the clear front runner because he's also got all the points and he's a good defensive player. I thought last year when it was Doughty and Burns and Karlsson, the more we talked to people at the award show, I kind of thought it would be Burns because, you know, he's sort of the hybrid between – or maybe the middle ground between Doughty and Karlsson. But this year, I mean, he's got 45 points on top of all he does defensively.
Yeah, he's averaging more than a point a game,
he's got 18 and again, goals.
Just remember a guy that played forward in the NHL.
He's got more goals than Patrick Kane.
He's having a ridiculous year. He's got to win it.
Yeah, I don't think we talk enough about guys like Burns and Buffalo and how difficult it is to make the transition at the highest level of the game and then be extremely successful.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know who's third in goals among defensemen is Kevin Shattenkirk. That's the trigger word for Craig.
Yeah, he's a marketable piece, isn't he?
Also, Victor Hedman isn't that can take over the role of most underrated player.
Well, best he's on my ballot. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Victor best Hedman's on my ballot. You know, at this point, still, I think Shea Weber's probably on
my top three. He's played very well.
He'll get votes, too, in Montreal, for sure.
He's had a good year. You can't deny that. Vezina Trophy, I think, at this point, we all agree, it's Devin Dubnyk.
Yeah.
Again, who are the guys down ballot?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure how far down ballot Carey Price is.
It's the top three that, you know, that everybody talks about in the end.
I mean, it would not shock me if Carey Price won this award.
Yeah,
even
Price is
going to
be in the conversation because he always is. Crawford deserves to be.
Braden Holtby and Sergei Bobrovsky, too.
Bobrovsky.
I think Devin Dubnyk is going to win it, but beyond that, it's a tough argument.
My ballot right now would be Dubnyk, then Price, then Bobrovsky.
And let's not forget Tuukka Rask, too, who's having a terrific year.
He is. I never want to forget Tuukka Rask.
Hart Trophy?
Crosby. Silence.
I think there was a mistake in your article, Craig, because you have Connor McDavid listed twice. So either you love Connor McDavid or that one of those Connor McDavid
nobody
was supposed
corrected
to be,
my mistake.
One of those Connor McDavid was supposed to be Sidney Crosby because he's nowhere to be found.
Maybe you just hate Crosby.
So which one was it?
Let's talk about
this. It's supposed to be Sidney Crosby.
Is Crosby the winner or or the ballot?
Yeah, that's true. You can't put McDavid in every spot and be like, I told you he'd finish first, second, or third.
Well,
I'll have to fix that.
Yeah, it's nice that somebody told me that.
They did.
It appeared in print.
After.
It's good to have editors.
So am I the only one that thinks Crosby's a contender for this award?
No.
Crosby's
on my ballot, but I'm giving it to Connor McDavid.
Really?
Yep.
Crosby has twice as many goals in 10 less games.
I just, when I think of the Hart Trophy, and if it depends on how you're measuring this, right?
Yeah.
If you just want to go, who's got all the points? Take Connor McDavid off the Edmonton Oilers.
And they're terrible.
They're a train wreck.
We've seen it.
They're a train wreck without him.
They're drafting Nolan Patrick.
He's having such an impact on this team. Such a massive impact on this team.
Yeah.
I think those two are clearly front runners.
Yeah, those two are clearly the two best players in hockey right now.
Not trying to sound like the guy that's from Pittsburgh, but isn't it going to be weird if Crosby goes out and scores 45 goals and has maybe his most dominant offensive season of his career and doesn't win the Hart Trophy?
You sound like a guy from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, there was a time where he was scoring a goal every game. Even now he has 27 in 37 games. And he's 1 point behind McDavid overall. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, but Brett Hull doesn't even think he's going to get to 50, so...
Oh, well, then never mind. All right. Who's your third guy on that list? Because good luck finding one.
Jeff Carter.
Bingo. Mine too.
That was mine
on the list, actually.
Jeff Carter's been LA's best player by far all season. Well, maybe for about a year and a little over a year now, if you go back to last season. Jeff Carter's been really, really good.
And boy, did they need it with Quick out and with... With Kopitar not having a great season.
I think he has three overtime winners. By the way, the Kings don't lose in 3-on-3. They're either 8 or 9-1 in 3-on-3 overtime.
I'm with you.
I'm looking at my story online and Sidney Crosby's there. Did you just change that?
I did.
Wow. He's crazy. Doing that while we're on the podcast.
Well, he's not doing much on the podcast. Jeff Carter's 16th in the NHL in points, though, so I don't see him ending up there. Like, you're right. He's been LA's best player by far, and he could easily jump five spots with a good game. But if he finishes the year 16th in the NHL in points... there's other big names.
Yeah, I think what's going to end up happening is whoever wins the Vezina or the Norris is going to be that in that three spot.
Yeah, that's I'm with you on that.
Okay, wrapping up on these last couple things here then. Who's your coach of the year?
I think you have to go Tortorella. It's the rules of coach of the year. A team that underperformed last year is overperforming now.
I can't wait to interview Tortorella at the award show.
It's going
to
be great. Bruce Boudreau is not going to get enough votes, probably because he's a victim of his own regular season success.
Oh, he'll be number two.
You think he will be?
Who else should be?
Who else should be on this list? I mean, Tom McClellan has to be on there.
Be on that
I think
list.
Joel Quenneville has done an unbelievable job.
Should get the Bill Belichick treatment. He should. He's the best coach, but he's not going to win the award.
Barry Trotz, Mike Sullivan, none of them are even going to be on the list, and they may finish with the three best records.
It's the Belichick effect. You win too much.
Mike Babcock. Babcock wins it, though, because he's having a good season.
There are a lot of people talking about Mike Babcock as he'll get talked about. Candidate.
What is the multiplier for doing something good in Toronto as opposed to somewhere else?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
It's at least like three times, right? I mean, he was getting talked last year when they were horrible.
Yeah, when they were in last place.
If they don't make the playoffs and he makes his way into the final three, I'm going to have a problem with that.
Look, if things just continue the way they're going and Bruce Boudreau or John Tortorella don't win Coach of the Year for McClellan, who I think has done an excellent job, and Babcock has done a good job, that's a joke.
I agree.
Then it's just simply what market you coach in.
Yep.
So
last one is the GM of the Year.
I'm with you on this. I like Jeff Gorton. As you said in your article, we've kind of been waiting for, okay, when's the end of the Rangers' run coming? And they've been able to piece together especially with the way Lundqvist is playing, without a superstar player, and piece together a very good roster with college signings and low free agent signings and a backup goaltender.
And got younger, too. They do all the things that they needed to do, and they're still right in the race in the Metro. I still think they're I don't know. We'll see how Columbus plays out, but I think the Caps and Penguins are certainly a step ahead of the Rangers. But
that's interesting that you would pick him, because you've been the guy that thinks the Rangers are going to drop off all year.
Yeah, but they haven't. And when you look at what they've added, he deserves some credit for, you know, even though you mentioned earlier that Jimmy Vesey hit a brick wall and isn't doing anything anymore. But they're getting contributions. They're rolling four lines, and they're effective. So it's impressive.
I think
the way they made themselves over. Who else on that?
I think Fletcher will get because I mean, the Eric Staal signing for what is he making $3.5 million a year, and he leads one of the best teams in hockey in points. He's going to get votes. Kekalainen, the problem for him is you can't point to anything he did specifically this offseason that has gotten this team to this point. They've just been patient.
How about being patient and not blowing it up after what happened last year?
I mean, I think that's worth something, but I don't think that'll get him enough votes.
Probably not. That's why I had him third.
Before we wrap up, I just want to throw this out. Carolina Hurricanes are 1 point out of a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm. Nice story.
Yeah.
Ron Francis got a mention there, too.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, they fleeced the Blackhawks, but a lot of teams do that lately, so.
But would you rather be the Hurricanes right now or the Blackhawks?
Yeah, I'd rather be the Blackhawks.
And take into account which division they play in, too, if you need that help. All right.
I'm missing Teuvo Teräväinen, but, you know.
Maybe that should be the name of your book.
Missing
Teuvo Teräväinen. And you could have Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan star in the movie.
Morgan.
You've got mail. It's from Teuvo.
I'm leaving you. I'm going to Carolina. Enjoy no forward depth. All right. On that note, for Jamie Eisner, Craig Morgan, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.